The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're coming up to an important anniversary tomorrow, the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. We have quite a lot to say about that here in just a bit. Speaking of anniversaries, though, today is the three-year anniversary of Donald J. Trump being voted in as the 45th president of the United States. You've probably seen some of the montages of all of the media saying that it was going to be a landslide victory for Hillary Clinton, and they all turned out to be wrong. The polling was wrong. Quite a lot of it was wrong in the lead up to that presidential election. And of course, in the 3 years since, his enemies, the Democrats, the Democratic media complex, have been doing everything in their power to destroy this presidency. They haven't accepted the result from November 8th, 2016. I thought this headline at the Washington Post was, the level of hypocrisy here is breathtaking. It says, can Republicans relearn how to accept political outcomes they don't like? This comes at the three-year anniversary of a presidential election that they have not accepted. They didn't accept the one back in the year 2000. They tried to get in there and steal it in the state of Florida. And then it happens in 2016. The last two Republican presidents, and they haven't accepted the outcome of those elections. And here's a columnist at the Washington Post saying it's Republicans who won't accept political outcomes. The hypocrisy, as I say, well, it's on display daily, as you well know. You could put a program together on that every day, and we sometimes do, but we don't want to beat a dead horse, I guess. But I want to just hit this one point from Daily Wire. We played the clip the other day of this ABC News reporter who said that she had the story on Jeffrey Epstein 3 years ago, but the producers there wouldn't let her run with it because it was right in the midst of the campaign from 2016. And, of course, you have George Stephanopoulos. He's he's one of their star reporters or anchors, I guess, at ABC. And he used to work for the Clintons back in the 1990s. He was their communications director, I believe. And now he's the star at ABC News. And here we're coming into this 2016 election between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And they weren't about to run with that story about this sexual predator. Well, the individual that blew the whistle on that, that exposed ABC for not having run with the story, covering it up, in other words, that employee moved over to CBS. I don't know when, but in any event, ABC convinced CBS to fire that whistleblower. Listen to these couple of paragraphs at the Daily Wire. It says, remember this the next time you hear someone in the media fret about protecting whistleblowers. It says, after footage leaked of an ABC reporter complaining about higher-ups killing her Jeffrey Epstein story and preventing her from reporting on it for 3 years, ABC set out to find the person responsible for the leak. Reportedly, they did find the culprit. The person now works at CBS. According to journalist Yasir Ali, that person has now been fired. Page 6, I guess that's of the New York Post, adds that the staffer is a female. Listen to this summation. To review, a woman at ABC discovered that the network was protecting a serial rapist and sex trafficker. She blew the whistle on the scandal and left the company. ABC then tracked down the woman and enlisted CBS to fire her on its behalf. Both of these networks, who colluded to punish a whistleblower, have spent the last many months and years breathlessly extolling the virtues of whistleblowing and the evils of collusion. Collusion and whistleblowing. And as I say, you see this sort of hypocrisy on display daily. 3 years on. 3 years on. I went back and looked at my notes for the program we did the day after that election, President Trump's election in November of 2016. Some of the statements and just the way the media reacted, the shock value of this billionaire businessman winning the presidency. Well, I guess that's a pretty significant anniversary as well, given the prophecy about the Jeroboam end. But I want to focus primarily on the 30-year anniversary that is tomorrow, November 9th, 1989, the fall of the Berlin Wall. It signaled the end of the Cold War era and introduced the world to a newly unified Germany. Of course, we've seen a lot happen in the continent of Europe since that momentous event. As I say, I want to focus in on some of that history with the program today. But let's start with going back to the mid-80s. This actually was 1987, June 12th, 1987, when President Reagan was in Berlin. So this would have been a couple years before the wall came down. And this is his famous speech where he called upon Gorbachev and the Soviets to open the gate, the Brandenburg Gate, to tear down the wall. And you'll hear in this two-minute clip the reaction coming from Germans right there in Berlin when Reagan made those statements. Here's clip one.
And now the Soviets themselves may, in a limited way, be coming to understand the importance of freedom. We hear much from Moscow about a new policy of reform and openness. Some political prisoners have been released. Certain foreign news broadcasts are no longer being jammed. Some economic enterprises have been permitted to operate with greater freedom from state control. Are these the beginnings of profound changes in the Soviet state, or are they token gestures intended to raise false hopes in the West or to strengthen the Soviet system without changing it? We welcome change and openness, for we believe that freedom and security go together, that the advance of human liberty can only strengthen the cause of world peace. There is one sign the Soviets can make that would be unmistakable, that would advance dramatically the cause of freedom and peace. General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
A memorable speech from June of 1987, one of President Reagan's most famous deliveries or speeches. And in the last many years, the United States has urged the German government to erect a statue of President Reagan there at the site of that speech, right there in front of the Brandenburg Gate. And for years, this is according to the Wall Street Journal, the city's successive governments, the local government, I guess it would be, have resisted gentle prodding by U.S. dignitaries to erect a statue of the late president. who famously called here on his Soviet counterpart, Mikhail Gorbachev's, or called on him, rather, to tear down the wall, that bit that you just heard there. And I thought it was interesting. The article brings out how that the Trump administration, I guess in Trumpian fashion, decided to forget about pressuring the city government and instead decided to build a 7-foot statue of Ronald Reagan at the U.S. Embassy in Berlin, which is just in that, it's right in the kill zone where, I mean, this area that used to divide the city, overlooking the Brandenburg Gate. So you can actually see the top of the statue from the street. And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, he's over there today. They had a ceremony, an unveiling of this statue. He's given a speech. We have a couple of clips from that speech that we'll play later on. But isn't it interesting? You heard the reaction to the speech in 1987, and then the wall comes down. Everyone remembers that dramatic footage, and just all the rejoicing, not just in Germany, but all over the world. And we're 30 years on from it, And for years, the U.S. has said, hey, you ought to put a statue of Reagan up there. And the German authorities, the city government, has said, no, thank you. You could honor a lot of presidents. So why should we focus on Reagan? It says a little something about what has happened since. 30 years. The wall came down and freedom and democracy was supposed to spread over all the earth. We were entering into a new time. We were told, one philosopher said, the end of history. We were coming into the halcyon time of, well, I guess somewhat of a utopia almost. Hasn't quite worked out that way, as we'll see here today. The local, it says here, the spirit of optimism is gone. A somber mood as Germany marks 30 years after the Berlin Wall came down. It says leaders of former Cold War powers will be absent from anniversary festivities as Donald Trump's America First, Britain's Brexit, and Russia's resurgence put a strain on ties. It says, gone too is the euphoric optimism for liberal democracy and freedom that characterized the momentous event on November 9th, 1989, as Germany grapples with a surge in far-right support in its former communist states. The former communist states, there's just this surge of far-right support, or support for far-right parties. The spirit of optimism that we saw 30 years ago, or even 5 or 10 years ago, is not perceivable today, says one of their local leaders. Listen to this. While the spotlight 5 years ago was on world leaders from Barack Obama to Mikhail Gorbachev, this time around, the central focus is on Europe itself. So at the 25, just think about how things have changed in 5 years. At the 25-year anniversary, it was an international collection of world leaders. Today, 30 years, or tomorrow, I guess, 30 years on, it's just mostly European leaders. It says here, this time around, the central focus is on Europe itself. On November 9th itself, only Central European presidents will headline the official ceremonies. Now, it points out how that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is over there. He was there for a couple of days, but he's leaving Germany today on the eve of the anniversary. And he was there to unveil this statue there with a U.S. embassy audience. Now, there were German officials, his equivalent to the Secretary of State, Heiko Maas, I think his name is. He's taken him around and so on. So, you know, from looking at the footage and some of the reports, the relationship has been pretty good. But when you step back and look at all that's happened, particularly since Donald Trump was elected as president 3 years ago, well, we've seen quite the strain in U.S.-European relations, in U.S.-German relations. And you've had this prod from the United States to, you know, go it alone, Europe, and build up your own army and take care of your own defense. Why was that so significant? The world thought it was significant because of what I just read to you. Well, this was supposed to signal the beginning of a euphoric, optimistic time where liberal democracy and freedom would spread over all the earth. It was a significant, seminal moment, for sure. But because of what your Bible prophesies, and we were there from the beginning, of course, sounding that alarm. The Worldwide Church of God should have been, and I'll come to that a little bit later. This happened at right at the same time there was a lot going on inside God's church. A great falling away from the truth. A great falling away from what Herbert Armstrong had been teaching and proclaiming for decades. All along his 50-year ministry, Mr. Armstrong, all the writers at The Plain Truth, the editorial staff, they were loudly proclaiming the inevitable rise of a united Germany, a German-dominated European Federation. Mr. Armstrong was talking about it even before World War II, all during World War II, even as Germany was just being crushed by the Allies there at the end of the war. He said, Germany's going to rise again. This is what your Bible prophesies. In 1950, Mr. Armstrong said that the world will be stunned, dumbfounded, to see Germany emerge suddenly in a power never equaled by Hitler, by a union of 10 nations in Europe, probably including some at present puppets of Russia, in a gigantic United States of Europe. Well, those puppets of Russia that he referred to in 1950, they're now part of the EU. Now, there's some restructuring to be done still. It's going to be downsized. The Bible talks about 10 kings. I'll come to that in a second. But how could he have been so right about Germany uniting, about the nations of Europe coming together in a united federation? What would he have said? He died, of course, in January of 1986. What would Mr. Armstrong have said had he lived long enough to see the fall of the Berlin Wall in November of 1989? Listen to what he said back in one of his old radio programs about the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, clip 2.
And some of us, my friends, know not only what we see when we're over there, but we know also what is prophesied. And we know what is prophesied to rise up in Europe. And we know which is the one and the only nation in Europe that is capable of dominating, and which is the economic and the industrial heart of all Europe, without which there could be no stability and strength. A human body cannot live without its heart. And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
Its heart is in Germany, he said, back when Germany was divided by this massive wall. It had been since 1961. From 1961 until 1989. Almost 30 years. Then the wall comes tumbling down. Mr. Armstrong had already died, but the prophecies of God certainly did not. Revelation 17 and verse 8 says, "The beast that you saw was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wander, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is." As we've explained so many times before, Mr. Armstrong was on the scene for the sixth head of the beast, the sixth resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. That's why this verse is worded in such an awkward manner. Because he was there during number six, and that's when God revealed it. But there was another resurrection to come after his death, after the ministry of Herbert Armstrong. Of course, after that resurrection, the sixth one was crushed at the end of World War II. That movement, that beastly movement went underground. But it's about to emerge one last time. And what will it look like? Well, verse 12 says, "And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast." So 10 kings. You can study into Daniel 2. We have plenty of booklets that delve into these crucial prophecies. Daniel 2, Daniel 7, Revelation 13 and 17. But here it speaks of 10 kings, the United States of Europe. 10 heads of state in Europe joining together. And as you heard from that soundbite we just played, the heart of that movement is in Germany. Verse 13 says, "These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast." The 10 nations, they have one mind. They're all together. They're all unified. It's certainly not a democratic movement. That's what was supposed to spread following the fall of the Berlin Wall. Instead, 30 years on, we see democracy in retreat. Look at the rise of all of these movements. The rise of authoritarianism in China, Russia. Yeah, the Soviet Union collapsed, but look at where Russia is today. 30 years on, one mind. They have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. If Mr. Armstrong would have been alive to see the fall of the Berlin Wall, he would have sounded the alarm, saying, "Look, this might look positive initially, but let's get back to the prophecies of God." I thought it was interesting in Mr. Pompeo's speech earlier today. He just made a passing reference to a couple of world leaders that didn't want Germany to unify. This is what he said just this morning, clip 6.
"We shouldn't forget that Mitterrand and Thatcher didn't support reunification at first."
Well, they didn't support, I'm not sure about what they were saying right near the end of their lives. But Thatcher, we've quoted this so many times before, "You have not anchored Germany to Europe. You have anchored Europe to a newly dominant, unified Germany. In the end, my friends, you'll find it will not work." That's what she said in 1995. It's not going to work. It's just in Germany's national character, as we've said so many times before. It's in their nature to dominate, and they're doing it again today. It just hasn't quite yet happened militarily. But to be sure, Germany is the dominant nation in Europe, a newly dominant, unified Germany. And of course, just looking at this prophecy here in Revelation 17, you see what it builds toward, this war with the Lamb, verse 14. And of course, the Lamb overcomes them, but it's leading right into the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. That's what we're talking about, these prophecies that are to be fulfilled just before the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. Let's look at Revelation 10 now. This event 30 years ago, it was significant in that it also brought us into a period, a prophetic period of no more delay. Verse 5, I'll start with this, Revelation 10 and verse 5, it says, "And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven and swear by him that lives forever and ever, who created heaven and the things that therein are, and the earth, and the things that therein are, and the sea, and the things which are therein, that there should be no more delay," as it says in the Revised Standard Version. It's not going to be delayed anymore. Listen to what the late Ron Fraser had to say. He wrote this in 1999 at the Trumpet. He said, "During the Cold War, history seemed stuck in a time warp as the U.S. and Soviet Russia glared at each other over a concrete barrier slicing through the German city of Berlin. It says history revived on that fateful night, November 9th, 1989, when the Berlin Wall fell. It says, in a sense, a history which had been held back, delayed for 40 years in the icy freeze of Cold War, was suddenly freed to pursue its ongoing course. And then he mentions how that we entered into this time of no more delay. Just this week, there was a piece at the Washington Post, this individual looking back on the past 30 years. And she brings out how that communism didn't usher in this golden age for Western democracies. Far from it. It says here, in the decades since the fall of the wall, that is, seismic events, movements, and global patterns have shaped the 21st century into a splintered, perhaps more dangerous era than the Cold War. Well, that's right. It is a more dangerous era today. Even though so many people have their heads just buried in the sand. But if we're watching world events, this author brings out the 9/11 attacks, the wars in Iraq and Syria, Al-Qaeda, the emergence of the Islamic State a few years ago. And of course, you've had earth-shaking developments with the economy, like in 2008. China's now becoming a superpower. President Xi is, well, he's in there for life. A dictator. Same with Putin. Russia has resurged. It says, in those initial years after the wall came down, new countries were born and Germany reunified. But wars and conflicts also erupted after the Soviet Union collapsed and post-colonial debt settling spiked. Some of the 1990s' bloodiest civil wars, Congo, Liberia, became footnotes in history. Rwanda endured a genocide that killed hundreds of thousands. Yugoslavia, ripped asunder by sustained violence, massacres, and displacement, produced far more coverage and even new nations. Further on, it talks about the ruinous civil war in Syria. It's gone on for 9 years. The ill-fated Arab Spring in 2011. What happened in Libya. Benghazi. The immigration. Because of all of these displaced refugees, the refugee crisis all across Europe, in Germany, millions and millions on a scale not seen since World War II, it brings out. On his watch, it says here, a second war with Chechnya killed thousands. Russia invaded Georgia and annexed Crimea from Ukraine after backing Russian separatists. And then it mentions Beijing's rise in the last 3 decades. During his speech this morning, Mr. Pompeo talked about the victory, the monumental victory, as he called it, but he did qualify it. Here's what he said initially, clip 4.
So here we are on this 3-decade anniversary, celebrating a monumental victory for mankind's natural longing for freedom. For this great city of Berlin, for Germany, for the German people, but also for the West.
A victory for Germany, to be sure, not so much for the West. I'll come to that more in just a second. But even in his speech, to be fair, listen to what he went on to say to qualify what he just said there. Clip 5.
All of us had a moment after those days where we lost our way in the afterglow of that proud moment. We thought perhaps that the collapse of communism in Berlin and Moscow and the rest of the Eastern Bloc was the start of an inevitable trend worldwide. There were those who wrote about the end of history. We thought free societies would flourish everywhere. And in some places, they indeed have. But we most importantly thought that we could divert our resources away from alliances and militaries and the things that had secured those very freedoms. Sadly, we were wrong. We were wrong about the human condition and the nature of the course that many countries might take today. Today, Russia, led by a former KGB officer stationed in Dresden, invades its neighbors and slays political opponents. It suppresses the independence of the Orthodox Church in Ukraine. Russian authorities, even as we speak, use police raids and torture against Crimean Tatars and Ukrainians who are working in opposition to Russian aggression. In Chechnya, anyone considered undesirable by the authorities simply disappears. In China, the Chinese Communist Party is shaping a new vision of authoritarianism, one that the world has not seen for an awfully long time. The Chinese Communist Party uses tactics and methods to suppress its own people that would be horrifyingly familiar to former East Germans. The People's Liberation Army encroaches on the sovereignty of its Chinese neighbors, and the Chinese Communist Party denies travel privileges to critics, even German lawmakers, who condemn its abysmal human rights record. The CCP harasses the families of Chinese Muslims in Xinjiang who simply sought refuge abroad.
All this in the last 30 years since the fall of the Berlin Wall. It was supposed to be different. It was supposed to get much better. Well, at least it has. At least it's gotten better for the United States, some would say. Listen to this from the Financial Times. What America lost when the Berlin Wall fell. It says less discussed than all of these other globally unstable developments or regions. It says less discussed as what the U.S. itself lost on that day. It lost a unifying enemy. As long as the country was menaced from outside, there was a natural limit to its internal squabbles. It was unpatriotic to take domestic politics too far. Once there was no threat or even competition, Americans were safe to argue among themselves with abandon. Partisanship did not begin with the fall of communism, but it did attain a new virulence. He's right. Look at what's happened. Nothing has done more to divide the nation than its unassailability in the world. In 1990, a congressman from Georgia called Newt Gingrich circulated a memo among Republicans calling for harsher language in politics. By 94, he was running the Capitol. Of the last five Supreme Court justices confirmed before 1989, not a single U.S. senator voted against four of them. Since then, no addition to the bench has commanded unanimity. In fact, like we saw last year, well, it's been some of the most bitter and contentious disputes and strife you can imagine. It says within weeks, in all likelihood, there will have been more presidential impeachments in the last two and a bit decades than in the previous two centuries. It says history does not allow for control experiments. We cannot know the state of U.S. politics in a world where the wall still stands and a communist empire glowers behind it. All we have to go on is the record, and it shows an unmistakable spike in rancor at the turn of the 1990s. It talks about some of the presidential elections and how you haven't really seen a landslide because you can't get a Democrat to sweep through the South. And obviously a Republican's not going to dominate the coast. So there's been no national president since the Cold War. It says, it's as though hatred obeys the first law of thermodynamics. Like energy, it can be transferred but never destroyed. The less of it a nation directs outward, the more it must channel at home. So we used to rally around this push against a common enemy. Now we're killing ourselves. That's the point that he makes. All of this history, it coincides with the beginning of the Philadelphia Church of God. The PCG, established at my father's firing just four weeks, 28 days after the fall of the Berlin Wall. God did it because of what was happening in his church, the worldwide church of God at that time. Verse 7, it says, this is still Revelation 10, but in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin or is about to sound, as it should read, the mystery of God should be finished, as he has declared to his servants the prophets. So there was a work that needed to be finished, and obviously those people in the church that God established through Herbert Armstrong, they weren't going to do it. Just look at the way they reacted to the fall of the Berlin Wall. Some of you have heard the story so many times before. They wrote about it. They were actually proud of it. This reporter from, I think it was Washington State, the Seattle area, called the Worldwide Church of God after the wall came down and essentially said, hey, I've seen your program before, and you've been saying for years that this is going to happen, that Germany's going to reunite, that there's going to be another resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Here's a news director at a TV station that was well aware of Herbert W. Armstrong's prophecies or what he proclaimed on the World Tomorrow program. This news director wanted some on-air comments about what the church was now going to say regarding the fall of the wall. Is this the beginning of end-time prophetic events? That's what they asked the Worldwide Church of God. Listen to this. We responded that it was premature to make statements like that. The news director was disappointed that we would not proclaim this to be the absolute beginning of end time events. But it was interesting that he did say that what the church has predicted from the Bible was remarkably close to what appears to be happening. See there, the message coming from that church. It was already watered down. The liberals had gained control. They lost their prophetic edge. They weren't sounding the alarm. Not in the Plain Truth, not on the World Tomorrow program. Both of them just fizzled, the Plain Truth. Where is it today? What about the World Tomorrow program? Herbert Armstrong had all those millions and millions and millions of readers and viewers. This was like his signature prophecy, you could say. 10 kings, 10 nations, led by a dominant Germany, a unified Germany, a newly united Germany. As I say, imagine what Herbert Armstrong would have said had he lived just long enough to see that wall crumble, to see those young people taking those pickaxes to this stone barrier that had been there since 1961. The mystery, it needed to be finished, as it says here in Revelation 10. It needed to be declared. And they weren't going to do it. The Worldwide Church of God, they were busy burying Mystery of the Ages. So God gave it to us later. And we've been proclaiming or prophesying again all along. 30 years. Verse 11, it says, and he said to me, you must prophesy again before many peoples and nations and tongues and kings. God had to raise up another work to finish the job. This is why you're here. This is why you're listening to this program. This is why you support the PCG. Because of what happened in 1989. Because of what God is doing. God is prophesying again. God is raising the ruins of that work that the Takaches and others ruined. My father writes in the Royal Book of Revelation, when Mr. Armstrong said he wanted to get Mystery of the Ages to the largest audience possible, that really was a commission for God's Philadelphia church today. The largest audience possible. That became our battle cry back in 1996 when we printed that book. That was our commission to finish what Mr. Armstrong started. He barely got started with distributing that book, Mystery of the Ages. As I say, how significant is it? November 9th, 1989, the wall comes down, and then just 4 weeks later, my father and John Amos are fired, and thus begins the Philadelphia Church of God. It started, of course, in the smallest possible way. The resources, the instruments weren't there at that time for the alarm to sound loudly, not to the world anyway. We had Malachi's message, and that certainly was causing an earthquake within the worldwide Church of God because that message did spread rapidly. But oh, what the world missed when the wall came down and Mr. Armstrong wasn't there to use those 400 TV stations, to use the 8 million circulation on the Plain Truth, to talk about the significance of that seminal event, to give an answer to that news director from that television stations that would have just rocked the audience with God's truth, with the prophecies of God. God had to raise up another work. Listen to what my father said on the Key of David program back in 2013. This is clip three.
The split in God's church occurred in December 1989, 1 month after the Berlin Wall came down in Germany. Well, there's here, there, even there, there's a contact between the church and this empire. As the church begins to rise, so does the empire. It's all connected. That's what God wants us to see, and this little remnant will tell you what it's all about.
It's all connected. This is what God wants us to see. For the scoffers who would say, 30 years, I mean, come on, it's just been too long. Surely these prophecies are not happening like you say. They are happening. Look at what God has raised up in His church. They're connected. It was a mustard seed beginning. Yes, indeed, it took some time to lay the groundwork, but now you look at God's work today. You look at the campus in Edmond, Oklahoma, here at Edstone. Doors beginning to open, we hope, in Jerusalem, so that we can reach the cities of Judah, even. God's raising the ruins. And of course, in Europe, it's all connected. You see the rise of this seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Now, some of it's happening beneath the surface. People still, they still don't see what you see, what we can see because of Revelation 10 and Revelation 11 and Revelation 17 and Daniel 2. But it is happening, and it's happening fast. There's no more delay. With God, 1,000 years is like one day. The plan is unfolding. We're entering into exciting times. There should be a real sense of urgency in our day-by-day offerings before God, our daily sacrifice before God. He said to me, you must do this. Prophesy again before many peoples and nations. Verse 1 of chapter 11, it says, and there was given me a reed like unto a rod, and the angel stood, saying, rise and measure the temple of God and the altar and them that worship therein. So as part of this work, you had the people of God measured. Measure the temple of God. Measure the church. Start with the ministry in particular. They're the ones responsible for this spiritual tragedy, this abomination of desolation. Start with them, warn the church, but also warn the world. Verse 2 says, "But the court which is without the temple leave out, and measure it not, for it is given unto the Gentiles. And the holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. That's Revelation 11, verses 1 and 2. Measure the temple of God. I read Revelation 17, where it talks about the 10 nations coming together, the 10 kings, the 10 heads of state. And it leads right into the return of Christ, as I said. The kings, the nations, they make war with the Lamb. That's in chapter 17. Here, in Revelation 10 and 11, notice what this culminates in. I read to you about the church split, God prophesying again, finishing the mystery. And then in this same chapter here, Revelation 11 and verse 15, it says, "And the seventh angel sounded, and there were great voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever." The commission that God has given to his church, it culminates in this, the greatest event in the history of the universe. The spectacular return of Jesus Christ to this earth. That is now just ahead of us, and we're seeing so many of these prophecies unfold just as God spells it out in the Bible. Gives us so much detail. Notice Acts chapter 3. We'll finish over here in Acts 3. And let me just step back even further from this 30-year window in which we've seen so much transpire right here in the last days. But if we can just zoom way out for a moment and look at what has happened on this earth since the Garden of Eden, since Adam and Eve rejected the tree of life, and it says there at the end of Genesis 3 that God sent them forth. He kicked them out of the garden. He cut them off from the tree of life. And all that they could eat from was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. They went off and established their own society, their own system of government and education and religion. Mr. Armstrong talks about this in his book, that final book that came out in 1985, just before he died, Mystery of the Ages. God said to our first parents, in effect, "You have made the decision for yourself, and the world that shall spring from you. You have rebelled against my command and my government. You have chosen the getting and taking way of Satan." He said, "Go therefore, Adam." This is God. This is essentially what God said. "Go ahead, you and all of your progeny that shall form the world. Produce your own fund of knowledge. Produce your own educational systems and means of disseminating knowledge. As your God, Satan shall mislead you from your own religions, your own governments, your own forms of society and civilization." You see, it's all on you. Go ahead and produce it. You're cut off from God, so go ahead and do it on your own. And that's what man has been doing ever since. And even when something momentous that everyone thinks is, well, surely this is the beginning of something fantastic. This is the beginning of a new and better world. This totalitarian state, or this Soviet empire, it was an international network, in fact, when that collapses, surely that means there's prosperity and peace just ahead of us. But what a rude awakening it's been. Human nature hasn't changed. In fact, it's getting worse. And we see signs of that all over the earth. In China, in Russia, in those Eastern European states that used to be Soviet puppets. And then the hatred and the division from within our nations in the West, particularly the United States and Britain, Judah as well. God's trying to make a point with mankind and that all of their efforts to go off and build their own civilization, their own nations, their own national governments, they've all failed, or they are all failing. And we keep trying to try new things, but there's nothing new under the sun. It's the same old governments. It's the same old system of education. It's the same old system of disseminating knowledge. There's been a knowledge explosion, to be sure, but look at all of the evil to go with it. This is the great paradox of our day. This, too, is something Mr. Armstrong spoke of. Well, it's all about to come to an end. It's building right now. It's building to the great tribulation. Jesus prophesied of this, Matthew 24, 21, and 22. Nations are going to war against other nations. Nations are going to band together, ultimately, to fight Jesus Christ. I just read those verses to you, Revelation 11, Revelation 17. But after he forcefully puts it down, then this, Acts 3, verse 19, it says, "Repent you, therefore, and be converted, that your sins may be blotted out, when the times of refreshing shall come from the presence of the Lord." Here is a time of refreshment. The Greek word means a recovery of breath or a revival. A true refreshing. It's brought on by the presence of the Lord, as it says there at the end. What Jesus Christ started in the New Testament church, it culminates in this at his return, a worldwide revival or restitution, as it says later on. Verse 20, though, it says, "And he shall send Jesus Christ, which before was preached unto you." This was penned well after Jesus Christ had been crucified and resurrected. Here it says, "God shall send him again." Jesus himself said, "If I go, I'm coming back." All of the disciples, the New Testament authors, Luke and Peter, Jude, Paul, all of them, even the last chapter of the Bible, Christ says, "I'm coming again quickly." Now with God, 1,000 years is just like a day. It's nothing compared to eternity. What a mistake it would be for us to just say, "Oh, my Lord delays his coming. It's not going to happen. I'll go bury my head in the sand, or bury my head in my device, my phone, my computer, entertainment." Verse 21 says, "Whom the heaven must receive until the times of restitution." That means restoration. The restoration of all things which God has spoken by the mouth of all his holy prophets since the world began. This has been the message from the beginning. This was the true gospel that Jesus Christ proclaimed. This is the message of the Bible. God he's going to restore his government to this earth. Every other government of man has not worked. Only God's government can bring about this kind of refreshing, this kind of restoration. And God's prophets have known all about this from the beginning. Surely, surely, if you're a discerning disciple of Christ, you can see man's inability to solve the problems of mankind. The wall comes down and problems are supposed to be solved, or at least they're supposed to be solved much better than they have been these past 30 years. Here's the solution. I'm reading it to you. Acts 3, verses 19 through 21. Mr. Armstrong said in an article back in 1977 that this passage summarizes the whole gospel, or even broadly, the entire Bible. He said, "I could preach every sermon for the rest of my life, each one different, using this one passage as my text." This could be the focus of every single message that we proclaim, and we could fill in a lot of details from other scriptures all through the Bible. The restoration of God's government to this earth. Lucifer took it away when he rebelled against God and became Satan. God offered Adam the opportunity to replace Satan on the throne of this earth. He rejected it. But the second Adam, as he's called in 1 Corinthians 15, Jesus Christ, he qualified to replace Satan on the throne of this earth and to rule this earth, God's coming kingdom, forever and ever. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next week.